Okay, last week we started talking about causal discovery from data, and that was last week's presentation. Please remind me, did we start last week with it, or did we talk a little about this? Actually, it doesn't matter. So we talked about learning Bayesian networks and causal discovery. What I will need maybe help with is where I stopped. What I will do is I'll just remind you what we talked about quickly. I have a feeling that we talked about some of the things 2 weeks ago or so. We talked about Bayesian networks, actually causal graphs. We talked about causality earlier in this course, yes, in the very beginning. These are causal graphs which we can specify with parameters, with conditional and prior probability distributions. And once we have graphs like this, we can perform calculations with them. We can ask the probability of chronic hepatitis, which is this variable, given observations of jaundice and ascites and alcohol abuse. So calculation like this is essentially conditional probability distribution of hepatitis given those three observations. The graphs can be very large, and the efficiency of representation is amazingly good. So we started with the idea that learning them from data starts with a set of variables, attributes, and then simultaneous measurements of those attributes. We can learn the structure. We can obtain insight into causal connections. So far we talked about causality and experiments as a way of learning whether something is causing something else. This block of classes is about discovering causality from data, without experiments, so with observations. Once you have you can get insight, but you can also learn the whole model, and then you can embed it into a decision support system. But that's outside of this course. We are interested in causality, obviously, because causality is so important in predicting the effects of manipulation, of intervention. In research design especially, causality, we need to understand how causality is related to dependence, because in experiments, the goal is to establishing causality. In statistics, very often they used to try to intimidate us not to use the word causality at all. Causality and probability are related to one another, which means that in the population of people who have flu, for example, there are going to be more fevers than in the general population. And the other way also, among those who have fever, there are going to be more people with flu than in the general population. Causal graphs, we talked about them in the beginning of the course. You also saw these pictures, I think. So the idea is that condition, an assumption known as causal Markov condition, has three implications: chains of events, chains of variables are going to be dependent on one another. Variables are going to be dependent because of common causes. And this is captured by a causal Markov condition. I'm just rushing through to kind of refresh our memory. It's an assumption, but it's used by everybody in practice. But there are no convincing counterexamples. So it is probably a good, solid assumption. Chains, directed chains, common causes, common effects, when observed, make the causes more dependent. If you remember, causal graphs are, I call them subjective, because they depend on what I want to look at. I chose the variables, I chose the way they are measured. In that way, they are subjective. But they are subjective also in the work of a scientist. A scientist wants to establish causality within the variables that he or she wants to look at. These are the three implications. Conditional independence: if you condition on something, you break the chains, you break also the common causes. When you condition on the common cause, the effects become independent. We talked about manipulation. If you manipulate, then you can still use the graph for prediction. You remember that? That was in the beginning of the semester. Essentially, when the guy intervenes, makes himself dead, kills himself, it doesn't matter what he was suffering from, cancer or other diseases, it doesn't matter, because there's a perfect intervention. The same here: if you cut the tire with a knife, then the rest of the graph is still good for predicting the effect of manipulation, of intervention. Just the causes become irrelevant. In experimentation, if you remember, coin was playing that role of the only cause of independent variable. If there was a correlation between that cause and effect, then it came from the independent variable. So if there's a correlation between the two, it can only come through this path. We cannot manipulate with that in that thing. We cannot conduct an experiment because of ethical reasons. I give you two examples that are kind of funny. People referring to causation and doubting there is a causation. There may be a essentially common cause. In both cases, they talk about common causes. We cannot always observe, experiment, so we sometimes should rely on observation. Observation requires assumptions, but experiments also require assumptions to make inferences. And then we started about talk about the two classes of experiments, two classes algorithms for discovering causality from data. We spent most of the time on the first one and very little time on the second. Constraint-based search, one correlation indeed does not imply causation. There can be different cases. There can be X causes Y, Y causes X. Both of them will make them correlated, dependent. There can be an unobserved common cause that makes them dependent, and observed common effect that makes them dependent. That happens often in case we collect the data somewhere. So single correlation, agreed, does not imply causation, but if you have collection of independences or dependencies, these can imply causation. This is the only graph that corresponds to this, these four patterns of independences. In the algorithm, two assumptions, two axioms, Markov condition that we talked about, that allowed us from observing the graph, from knowing the graph, tell which things are independent in the data. If you remember, chains and common causes, they make things dependent, otherwise they are independent. The second assumption is more controversial, faithfulness condition. It assumes that all independences in the data are structural. It means that there are consequences of Markov condition. This is more controversial because there can be multiple paths, and those paths can cancel each other out perfectly. So in this case, For example, what you will observe in the data, if these path cancels each other out perfectly, that staying up before an exam is going to be independent on the exam performance. There's a theorem that under not a very restrictive assumption, under a set of popular distributions, this event of the paths canceling out each other is very unlikely. Precisely, Lebesgue measure zero, very unlikely. Constraint-based, search-based learning learns a graph of structures, equivalence class of graphs of structures. They can be divided in equivalence classes that are indistinguishable. You cannot distinguish among them. Two important theorems. The first is essentially independence is amounts to lack of connection. And then the V-structures class, my picture from last week is still there. V, because usually we draw it this way, like a V, a letter. Causal model search. Here is the algorithm. I explained it using an example. If this is the graph that generated the data, we will observe two independences, two missing arcs, two independences. A and B are independent. Why? There is no common cause and there is no directed path between them. A and D, missing arc. When are they going to be independent? When you condition on C, you break this path. But unfortunately, you open up this path. Because when you observe C, A and B become dependent. So A, B, D, this path is going to be still active. So you need to condition on B also. And in the data, you will observe this, these two. You don't know the graph, but you have the data, and the data will tell you this. The algorithm starts with a complete graph. You remove the arcs based on independences. And then you have a skeleton of the graph. Then you look for the V structures in step number two. And then you look for the V structures in step number two, and you see that A, C, B is a V structure. They are, to make A and B independent, you don't need to condition on C, so it has to be a V structure. The other one, the other candidate, A, C, D, is not a V structure. So in the final step of the algorithm, cleaning up, you need to orient the arc the other way, in this direction. Not from D to C, but from C to D, to avoid that V structure. And then the final arc, BD, has to be oriented from B to D. If it was oriented the other way, we would have a cycle, which is excluded by assumption. PC outputs a pattern, which is a collection of different arcs. This is a normal arc, which means that in that path, every graph in that collection of graphs will have an arc here. When you see a red path, then actually this is a mistake. It means that there is an arc from A to B or from B to A. We don't know which way. And bidirectional edge means that there is an arc from A to B or B to A, or there is a common cause between the two. Okay, I think I can stop the recording now.